case this morning is 061192, Ingrade Translogic Technology. Mr. Lot.
May it please the court. If I can convince this court of two things, Translogic should win this appeal. The first is that the board erred in its claim construction. The second is that under a proper claim construction, the board erred by not applying this court's genus-species analysis to Gorai's figure three. The key claim construction issue is whether the input terminal couplings are structural limitations or not. Translogic contends they are. That's half the body of the claim, is describing what the input terminals are coupled to.
Let me see if I understand that. You're saying that the control signal and the input variables are part of the claim instruction. Is that your position?
Not the electronic signals themselves, Your Honor. The electronic signals, the waveforms themselves, for example, never show up in a circuit diagram. It'll depend if the signal's coming from a CD player, it depends on what's being played on the CD player. And yet, of course, if you're going to try to prove infringement, you're going to have diagrams of the circuits, and what you're going to look to is the signal sources. The couple to receive language is understood and intended and used by people in this art to describe connections to signal sources. It doesn't make sense any other way. We agree that the signals themselves, the electronic waveforms, are not part of the claim. You know, indeed, when we're going to prove infringement, you just can't know what signals are going to be running through the thing. That's not what we do. What we do is we get circuit diagrams. If, for example, if you have a chip, you want to get diagrams of that chip. You've got to reverse engineer it, that means slicing it off, looking at it under the electron microscope, and then drawing the connections. If I could illustrate the point with the drawings at page 27 of the opening brief of Translogic.
But the circuit's a structure. What's connected to it doesn't matter. I mean, it's the structure we're looking at here and that we're worried about.
Yes, and we've claimed the connections. And let me show you the connections on page 27.
You claim something capable of receiving signals.
That's describing what
the structure does. It's not describing what it is that it does in fact receive. It just says it is capable of receiving it.
Actually, the word capable does not appear in the claims for a reason. I mean, we could have said an input terminal capable of being coupled to receive a signal, and we do not. We said an input terminal coupled to receive a signal. And what that places two negative limitations on the structure of the wire that goes from the input terminal to the signal source. The two negative limitations are no two input terminals in the claim multiplexer circuit can be connected together. Because if you look at page 27 as an example of our opening brief, I got three drawings at the bottom there, and the middle one is what's known as an XOR circuit, an exclusive OR circuit. It's got two input terminals, one set.
Are you referring to type 2 or to a type 2?
Down below, okay. Actually, the one where it says one variable, uh-huh. And it's got the two input terminals, 117 and 119, and it shows those two input terminals connected together. You haven't yet got to the signal source. That's just the connection. And the connection to wire is going to be metal on silicon. And so what we're saying is you can't have it because it's impossible. Those two input terminals are not capable, to use your words, they aren't capable of
receiving. That's the district court's words, which I'm going to get to in a minute. Go ahead.
They're not capable. That was the district court's words. That's true. They are not capable. Those two input terminals, because of the way they're connected, and you can erase the A1 there that signifies the signal or signal source, and just look at the connection. They are not capable of receiving first and second input variables respectively. Because they are coupled, the two input terminals are coupled together, it's impossible for them to receive two signals, and that's due to the structure, the wire that's on the silicon that we can find in an infringement analysis by reverse engineering and using our electron microscopes. That's structure. That's how it's understood by one skilled in the art. And I could show you that same structure in the prior art at issue here. I would, if I could refer to the court, and this is in our opening brief as well at the end where we've got the board's decision, to the page A0178. It's at the back of the brief. And it's the drawing of Tosser's figures 9, or actually, Tosser's figure 6 that the board provided. Okay?
But now, why does coupled to receive tell us we have to incorporate the signals being received into your claim construction?
We're not incorporating the electronic signals being received. We're not doing that. What the claim
was... We're just talking about the structure of a circuit. What do we care as long as it receives something and it outputs something? It's the structure that we're concerned about.
But a circuit, not a cell. And everyone has suffered from the record in this case because all the engineers and as a result all the lawyers talk about multiplexers ambiguously. There's a multiplexer cell and there's a multiplexer circuit.
And you claim the circuit.
That's right, and that includes the input terminals connected, whereas the board is trying to limit us to the cell. And they call it a bare multiplexer, and the word bare is well chosen. They're stripping our circuit of the connections. We're claiming an installed cell, and installed in a certain way. Installed so it's capable of performing a multiplexer function. And it's not capable of doing that if you've got those two input terminals connected together. Then, because at that point, as soon as those two input terminals are connected together, it's impossible for them to receive, that is, they're not capable of receiving a first and second input variable respectively. And that's the case with Tosser. If you look at this picture, again, A0178, which is at the back of the appellant's opening brief, and it's page 59 of the board's decision. And if you'll see that very top signal on the far left is labeled B. And if you trace it back, you see it branches off. And it branches off and goes to two different input terminals. That's exactly like the XOR. I mean, that's the same point as the XOR circuit I showed you a minute ago. That's the connection. You know, that's not what it's connected to. That's not the signal. That's the coupling. We claim the coupled input terminal, and that's the coupling. And because you have two input terminals structurally connected together, and then to a signal source, it's impossible. They are not capable of receiving two different signals. And that means Tosser's circuit is not a 4-to-1 multiplexer circuit, and it's not. And what we claim is what it is.
Gori.
And then Gori adds a twist. You know, there's a reason in Gori. There's a reason in Gori that people, whether it's the board in this case, or the Hitachi and other ones, ignored the actual circuits where Gori filled in what's received by all the input terminals, and they choose the least clear circuit or circuit template. Figure 3 is because of its ambiguity. What are they running from? They're running from figures 6, 8, 9, and 10, which all show Gori-like circuits. That is, they all show circuits with the couplings, input terminals connected together, or connected to power and ground, and that's also a structural distinction. That's the second negative limitation that the court correctly found and the board error did not find. And so, that's right, with Gori.
Gori is disclosing exactly the same thing, except we don't know exactly what's in the box, but the box is easily filled in by one of skill in the art using West or the cell libraries.
That's the
basis of the argument, and I haven't heard that addressed yet.
No, that's the second point. I will address the second point. The second point is what Gori Figure 3 discloses, if it's disclosing any circuits, which is debatable. But if you're going to say it's disclosing.
Well, it discloses, it's right there.
Well, what I'm saying is.
Cascading networks of multiplexing, and then you've got something that looks exactly like your structure. Help us out.
Right, and it's disclosing a cascading network of cells, and then it shows you how some input terminals are connected, namely the control terminals, But it does not show you how any of the data, the four data input terminals are connected. It merely gives you symbols, H1, HP minus 1, HP, GP, and then those symbols are defined. And that definition ain't simple. It is not simple. You know, it's got two parts to it.
It's disclosing a serial arrangement of two inputs, multiplexers, one coming out. That's your invention, alleged invention, exactly.
That is certainly not our alleged invention, exactly. It's far from it. Basically, the bottom line is, you got to buy the premise.
What's the difference?
Yeah, that's right. You got to buy my premise to see the difference, which is disclosing a genus. Now, that is many possible circuits. And where the distinctions between the circuits are going to be how the input terminals are connected. And if you buy that track, for example, I'll tell you exactly what Gorai figure 3 is. That's DNA. That's a DNA helix before anybody tells you whether it's the A or the C or the G or the T, you know, before they tell you the base pairs. You don't know if it's a mouse or an elephant. And it's going to look 99% the same, but the differences will matter. If you've got an input terminal coupled to receive a constant, which figure 3 allows for, or coupled to have two of the input terminals coupled together, which figure 3 allows for, we say requires, it's not a man anymore, it's a mouse. You know, and how big is it? If you're going to buy the premise that it's a genus, and it's a genus because of the connections, and the connections are structural, you know, how big is a genus? It's infinite. It's billions. It may not seem like billions, but it's billions. And again, it goes to the notion of DNA, that when you start to multiply by powers of 10.
What is missing to make it the exact species of your invention? Only the multiplexer structure which you get out of West, right?
No. That's the inside of the box.
Outside of the box. The outside of the box looks identical, doesn't it?
No. And in order to know that it does, first off, as my expert said at the trial, and I say this not as evidence, but just to illustrate the point, you know, he's from BYU, and he made the point that, look, at BYU, we do more than look at the pictures, we read the article. And so, when you look at, for example, the patent in the patent's pictures, they'll say I0, I1. You know, the claim says coupled to receive first and second input terminals respectively. First and second are not there for antecedent bases. There's substantive limitation. It has to be connected to different signal sources, because if they're connected together, you know, like that, you can only get one signal. Now, that is not true of figure 3. You say exactly, that's not true. That final stage, for example, could be exactly the XOR circuit I showed you a minute ago. Nothing in the definitions of GP and HP preclude that. And in fact, we say if you look at definition 1, it requires it. But the main thing is it exact? No. And there's a thought behind it. You know, there's a doctrine I read about, Learned Hand came up with or something, where it talks about the notion that, look, you can have minor changes in structure, but if the thought behind it is quite novel, that's a patentable invention. You know, you can say that the differences between the DNA, between a mouse and a man, is 99.9% the same. Well, that's sweet. It's still a mouse and a man. I mean, that's a huge difference. And when you're talking about, you know, the whole circuit is not going to work. If you got one, the whole thing could crash if you got one cell where what you wanted was a 4-to-1 multiplexer and what you got is a XOR circuit. And that has to do with whether that GP and that HP are the same as the I0 and the I1 that are in the patent, and they're not. And if it were just a matter of GP and HP, if that's the whole genus, if it's a small genus, well, to a person of skill in the art, maybe it would disclose our circuit. But it is not small, nor was it intended to be small. And if you read the whole article, this is where the board erred in applying the court's genus species analysis, and it puts you at a disadvantage. Because the board did not identify the scope of the genus. I'm telling you it was billions. They don't disagree. They have no findings on it. But if you look at the scope of the genus, it's huge. And then our gripe is, They didn't look at the whole article because it's pointing away from... Borei is not trying to take known circuits, and a 4-to-1 multiplexer was a well-known circuit, the prior art kind, and improve upon it. Nothing in Borei's algorithm says it's going to make you a better circuit than you had before in your cell library. It's trying to take functions that you don't know how to do. There's no cell in the cell library for that function. And say, can I make a circuit that will do it?
Thank you, Mr. Budd.
Thank you.
You've used your rebuttal time. We'll give you a few minutes.
Okay.
Marco?
Thank you.
If you need more time, you can add.
Make me support.
I just like to start off by saying the claim construction issue is not dispositive in this case, Your Honor, because as we've advocated in our brief, even if we went with Translogic's claim construction, a more narrow construction, the board's findings, the examiner's findings, the evidence in the record, support that Borei still has all of the features necessary to read up the claim, with the exception of TGMs.
How could they have, could they have amended their claims to the apparatus claim in order to understand?
Well, they had the opportunity to amend during
the
examination.
Well, how would they have
amended it? Well, I think it sounds like what they're really trying to get here is a method of use. And maybe they could have claimed it as a method. But even if they would have done that, arguably, the teachings of Borei and Tosser may have motivated and may have still rendered obvious the method. But that would have been a way to amend the claim.
Can you see a way that they could have amended it as an apparatus claim?
I think in order to amend it as an apparatus claim, you would have to define the surrounding circuitry in your claim. Here, all they've done in their disclosure and in their claim is define the specific multiplexer circuit, but all the surrounding circuitry that creates these input signals, none of that's defined in the claim. So when the board reads that claim...
Why isn't it defined by the connection language?
Well, coupled to receive an input, coupled to receive an input signal, that doesn't preclude a piece of prior art that may send in other signals in addition to variables. I think the board's reading of the claim says that you, as long as you have a piece of prior art that can feed input variables as some of your signals, but if it also feeds other signals in there, for example, constants, that's not precluded by the claim. So the board's reading is slightly broader than Translogic's reading, but it's not reading the limitations out of the claim. It's simply treating that language as statements of intended use or functional language, which just 2 minutes ago, appellant admitted that the signals themselves are not part of the structure. They admitted the signals are the intended use of the device. Well, if that's the intended use of the device, then the board's reading the claim correctly, where what's coming in, the signals that are coming in are the intended use. And he criticized, you know, appellant criticizes the Borei reference, the prior art reference and the Tosser reference, and says, hey, they don't show where these other variables are coming from or these other signals are coming from. Well, neither does their disclosure. If you look on inside of our brief, Your Honor, at page 7 and page 6 of our brief, we've got a drawing of the Borei figure 3, and then we've got a drawing on the prior page, I guess it's facing page of page 6 and facing page of page 5 of our red brief. If you look at those two pages, you will see the claim device inside of page 5, and it shows the three multiplexer TGMs in series, and it shows the inputs and the control signals, and it doesn't show where they're coming from. It just says inputs being received. That's all it says. And if you look at the Borei reference, it's the exact same thing. There are these input variables coming into the, on the next following page, facing page, you'll see very similarly in the way that the disclosure of the claimed invention is disclosed, the prior art device is doing the same thing. And the Borei reference specifically teaches that these input signals necessarily are coming from some other source. Obviously, they're coming from a source. Obviously, they're connected to something to create that source. But the claim is not narrow enough to preclude a source that could send in more than just variable inputs. It could send in constant inputs. It could send in variable inputs that are not
different. You're not supporting the board's construction anymore, right?
I think I am, Your Honor. I think if you read the board's construction closely, what they're saying is as long as a piece of prior art is capable of receiving input variables, it's good enough. The point, and then I'll give you an example where the board distinguishes to clarify what they mean by that. If you go to page A131 of the joint appendix, at the bottom of page A131, it's the white joint appendix. because there was confusion in the prosecution between the board and the examiner and the appellant, and they clarified themselves that the difference is, if you look at footnote 1 at A131, it says when an input, I don't know if you're there yet, Your Honor. I'll wait a second for Judge Mayer to get there.
I was looking at the wrong page.
Okay. Page A131, Your Honor?
Yep.
At the very bottom is footnote. And what the board is doing there is they're explaining the difference between if one of the inputs were hardwired to a constant, for example, hardwired, where all that could ever come as an input was a constant and nothing else, that would be an example of a device that's not capable of receiving an input variable. So they're distinguishing the difference between that and what the way they're construing the claim. In other words, Garai, Tosser, well, first of all, Garai has all four input variables and three control variables, exactly like the claim. It's exactly as they're arguing the claim requires. But if you read the claim with the breadth that the board reads it, they're saying it merely has to be capable of receiving input variables. And this footnote explains the difference where what would not be capable of receiving input variables. An example where one of the inputs was completely hardwired off, where you couldn't change the inputs, where it was fixed, it was always a constant and never anything else other than a constant. That's different than what we've got in our prior art. In our prior art, both the Tosser reference and the Garai reference show where inputs can be constants, they can be variables, they can be the same as other variables, they can be different from the other variables. And that's another point. All of the argument on claim construction by appellant presumes the word different or independent in the claim. It's true that the claim recites first input variable, second input, third input, but there's nothing in that claim that precludes the first and second input from being the same in a particular iteration or a particular application. Think of it this way. A multiplexer is simply a device that selects from multiple inputs. For example, if there's two inputs and there's a control line, the multiplexer simply picks A or B. It picks A or B, and it doesn't really care what A or B are. A or B, the input signals don't have an impact on how the multiplexer operates. It simply selects. It's basically a traffic cop. They've got two or three or four lanes of traffic, and they have to pick which lane's going to pass through. That's exactly what the claim device does. It takes input signals, four of them, or five of them, depending on how many you have in the series, or six, you could keep stacking these together, and it selects from the inputs for an output. And the selection is based upon what type of control variable is telling it to select. So that is the basic definition of a multiplexer as a separate unit, and it's also the definition of a multiplexer as a combined circuit.
If Garai and West and all these things are so much within the knowledge of one's skill in the art, why does it take 3 years in the fifth examination, re-examination request before we get Garai into the record?
You know, I wish I could answer that question, Your Honor. If you go back and look at the original application and the original examination, Garai wasn't there. If you look at the first, second, third, and fourth re-exams,
Yeah, the Garai reference wasn't there.
Four re-exams
and it's the fifth one before we get to Garai.
Yeah, I understand that. I don't know why the Garai reference didn't come up earlier, but there's no dispute that Garai is prior art. There's no dispute that it was publicly available. It is definitely qualified. The reason we have the re-examination statute is to exactly take care of this exact problem where a reference is missed. Someone out there in the world finds the reference, brings it into the PTO, requests the exam, they examine the case. Moreover, beyond the Garai reference, beyond Tosser, if you look at all the other, there's many other references in this case that teach these basic concepts. They may not teach it precisely as closely as Garai does, but they teach the basic concepts. For example, one of the original references in the first re-exam, the Japanese 219 application, which is not a basis for the rejection here. Nevertheless, it showed two TGMs in series. Now, it didn't show three, it didn't show four, it didn't show five, but now there's a Garai reference which does show three, four, five TGMs in series. I wish I could answer that question.
The board basically rejecting a significant language is irrelevant, sort of like junk DNA, is incidentally.
Yeah. I don't think they're
able to receive, of course, you're trying to stay away from it as much.
Well, let's talk about that, Your Honor. I don't think they're treating it as irrelevant. They're treating it as functional language. There's a difference. Functional language, an applicant is free to use functional language to define their invention. But when they do so, statements of intended use, statements of function, there's nothing wrong with that. You have every legal right to do it that way, but when you do it that way,
you open the door to the risk that there might be a piece of prior art with a specific structure that's the exact same structure that you have that is capable of being used in that way. So what happens with functional language is not that it's being ignored, it's being given weight. It's just not being given the same weight as if it were structural language. I guess the Schreiber case...
Not by you, but it was given... It was not brought by the board. It was not given any weight at all.
I was saying
in the beginning that even if the complaint construction is wrong, Gorai is the answer. But we have to, don't have to decide this case on the record that is made.
I think that is the record.
We have to do a fresh kind of thing.
I think the board made those findings, Your Honor. The board made alternative findings in the decision. The board did both. The board construed the claim, and they did, and I'm sorry if I misstated it. The board never read limitations out of the claim. They did give the couple to receive language weight, and they said that the prior art had to be capable. Well, in the prior art rezone, but they didn't ignore it. They didn't read the language out of the claim. That's not what happened. And I just want to be clear about that, because by saying the prior art must be capable of receiving variables, which means if the prior art was not capable of receiving input variables, that would be, therefore, a limitation in the claim that would preclude, would get around the prior art, but that's not the case here. So that is, they are giving it weight. If they were giving it absolutely no weight, you could find prior art that was not capable of receiving variables, and that would still be good, but that's not what happened. So they are giving it weight, but they're giving it the weight of functional language, which is different than weight that is given to structural language. Second, what I said earlier, that even if their claim construction is correct, Gorai has it all, they made alternative findings in the decision, Your Honor, not just one finding. They said, hey, here's our claim construction. Tosser, Westy, renders the claim obvious, unpatented. Moreover, Gorai, Westy, renders the claim obvious, not patented. Then they went on to say, even if we went with your claim construction, appellant, even under your claim construction, Gorai still has all these features of independent and different and input variables. And then they went through Gorai and pointed it out and explained it. So I think there's two sets of findings in the decision, Your Honor, and I don't think claim construction going one way or the other makes a difference. I think either way, you've got two sets of factual findings in this decision that support an affirmance of the board's decision under either claim construction. So I just want to clarify that point a little bit. I guess the final point that I wanted to make is I don't think the cases with respect to genus and species and DNA are really applicable here, because appellant attempts to, you know, to distinguish the Gorai reference based on this genus species theory that, oh, there are billions of possible combinations, and they've picked one species out of the genus, and therefore what they've got is, you know, it's very similar to those cases. That's not what happened here. What you've got here is a structural device exactly like its claim. And then, yes, there are many, 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 many functions, mathematical functions, that device can implement. And that's true. If you read through the second half of Gorai, figures 6 through 9 of Gorai, and look at all the fancy algorithms, absolutely, you can take this structural device and you can apply it with many, many, many different inputs and get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different types of functions as outputs. That is not the same, because the functional output, once again, is simply the use of the device. It's not the device itself. So our focus is on what the device is, not what the device does. And that's the key for claim construction. But as we pointed out earlier, even if we went with their claim construction, Gorai has independent variable inputs, independent control variables, 3 or 4 or 5 multiplexers, 2-1 multiplexers linked in series, all to perform a multiplexing function, just as the claim requires. So we're confident that there's more than substantial evidence in this record to support the board's findings and that their decision be affirmed. And if there are no further questions, Your Honor, I'll take my seat. Thank you very much.
Very briefly, just a couple points, Your Honor. One is, with respect to amending the claims to be able to have, basically, obviously a subtext here is we've got this companion case and there's a lot of money at stake. And we feel like we were ambushed with a new claim construction at the board level. We never got a chance to brief it at the examiner level or at the board level, and now they're virtually abandoning it here on appeal and saying it doesn't matter. That's not the way it's supposed to work. We were supposed to have, if they think we haven't properly claimed the two negative limitations I mentioned before, meaning no input terminals can be coupled together, and no input terminal can be coupled to power or ground, and that's also a structure, as I think you just admitted. If the current claim, which the court said has those negative limitations to it as construed by the court, if the board disagrees and this court disagrees, we want a chance to rewrite it so that it tracks identically to the way the court construed the claim. Because if we can do that, there's not going to be any intervening rights issues, even if there would be otherwise. And if we can have the claims be amended, you know, in the patent office so that they read exactly on what the, how the district court construed them to everyone's satisfaction, or at least to this court's satisfaction, no intervening rights issues. You know, we get our money. I mean, that's the subtext here. Second, though, I want to address, and we want the chance to do that. Second, I want to address.
Well, you may want the chance. Why do you have the right to have the chance?
Well, I just want to make it clear that that's, that is one of the our requests for relief to the court.
But you have the opportunity in these proceedings that lasted for years and years. I mean, you're suggesting that you have not met entitlement to a right to a do-over and amendment if we would agree with the board here?
If the court finds that there were new grounds of rejection, a new claim construction is new grounds of rejection, then we do have a right to amend. I mean, they're not supposed to have new grounds of rejection. They're supposed to send it back down to the examiner with that new ground of rejection to give us the right to amend. That's right. And so what I'm trying to make clear is we requested that relief at the board level in our request for rehearing. We requested that relief in our brief, and I just reiterated it. And that's a good idea if we don't win out right now. The other point I want to make, though, is with respect to the negative limitation of the input terminal fixed to power of ground, I'd like to direct the court's attention to, in the appendix, to A3135. And all I want to show is that when we talk about an input terminal coupled to receive an input variable, that's been construed consistently to exclude an input terminal coupled to receive a constant, that is, or at least input variable is distinguishing a constant. Well, if you look at A3135, it shows essentially a circuit diagram. But this is very close to how they might look on a chip. And if you'll see at the top and at the bottom, there's these rails. They're the power and ground rails. They're labeled VDD and VSS.
I'm afraid we're having a
limit there. All right, so that's the circuit. Thank you.
Thank you.